It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at mybradio.com, mybradio.com, or on the 77 WABC app. As we've been saying to you over the last roughly 3 years, Nielsen Ratings has us in the top 10. I just checked the ratings from last month. We came in number 5. I know after tonight's show, we're going to be probably number 1. So but I'm going to keep you in suspense for another minute or two. This show, which we come to you every single week, is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and ask them the questions that are on your mind. We cover such a wide range of professions and industries, including sales, social media, corporate culture, emerging technologies, retail, entrepreneurship, marketing and advertising, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business to get you ahead in today's business world. Well, as we do each week, we open with some thank yous. Special thank you to the team at Bottom Line Marketing Group who plays such a great support role. Srili, Michal, Eliana, Miriam, Dina, thank you. And to the great folks here at 77 WABC. James, Matt, Chris, Lexi, Justin, thank you. Also, a special shout out to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on, the B-Tank Magazine column, C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV. Special shout out to Jeffrey Hazlett. He's the one that initially got me in touch with my amazing guest, who, yes, will still remain nameless for another minute or so. The OG Podcast Network, Player.fm, iTunes, YouTube. We have a robust YouTube channel, and it's like a virtual university. I mean, we cover... So many people have pointed out to me, they said, you know, it's like TED Talks, and it is. All episodes are available by going to the platform for the show, mybradio.com, mybradio.com. That's where you can pick up every single guest we've had. And just to name tease a little bit, John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple and Pepsi, Dr. Adrienne Boise, the Chief Experience Officer at the Cleveland Clinic, Dawn Fay, Robert Half, Dick Schulz, founder and chairman of emeritus of Best Buy, Linda Kaplan Thaler, Christine Comerford, Amanda Holmes, Joanne Lublin of the Wall Street Journal, and so many other fantastic guests. And tonight's guest will also join this amazing group. Well, yes, so who is tonight's guest? Well, tonight's guest is a former vice chair at General Electric. She's president. She was president of Integrated Media at NBC Universal. She's a director at Nike. And Forbes and Fortune listed her as one of the most powerful women in the world. Her recent book, Imagine It Forward, is an amazing book. That's an understatement. I recommend everyone should go out and order it right now. I'm working my way through it. You'll hear it during this tonight show. I can't thank you enough for joining me here in studio. Beth Comstock, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here, Yitz.
What a special guest. Well, where do we begin? Your book is what, 400 pages? I mean,
I packed a few pages in there.
Yeah, now I have questions on each page.
I'm a value author. I give you more pages for your money.
That is true. That is certainly true. And of course, it's available everywhere. This is not just an Amazon release. Of course, you can get it on Amazon. Yes, I'm going to put in my recommendation soon. I didn't do it yet. I will do it before Shabbos, before the end of the week. You will see it up, Beth. Let's just talk about your storied career. And of course, you're young, so you still have many years ahead. But just someone, you know, I like asking this question to really people with a great story. How did it all start? When did you dream about this? And what you actually wound up doing, is it something you dreamt about in kindergarten, in high school?
Yeah, certainly not in kindergarten or high school. I grew up in a small town in Virginia, right, in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. And I liked my small town environment. I went to college in my state. I mean, the world I knew was the world I liked. And so the idea of having the career I've had, being able to see the world in the way I have, was beyond what I thought possible. That being said, I can tell you, I remember in fifth grade, I loved geography. It was one of my favorite subjects. And just seeing the world, I went to college, I studied biology and anthropology. And so I think in there, I see the seeds of what became my career, a real curiosity about human behavior. And originally, I thought I was going to go to medical school. I punted that because I wanted to be a science reporter. Right. And I ended up getting into marketing and working for one of the biggest companies on earth. So I couldn't have planned that.
Let's pivot to the book. The title is Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change by Beth Comstock. You know, the title, I'm sure, I mean, anyone that worked on a book, there are many titles that fly through the brain as you're developing it. What were some of the title ideas, and why did you ultimately settle on Imagine It Forward?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that. I've been cleaning out some. It was the book's a long process, and I've been cleaning out files, and I found just pages and pages. I bet we had 100 different titles. At least I had 100 different titles in my head. And for me, imagination has always been this theme. As I put the book together, it was a thread that I carried through. So I knew I wanted something around imagination, and frankly, mm-hmm. the dearth of imagination that I worry about in our organizations today. So that was sort of the problem I was trying to solve, and I love the optimism of it. But there was also a key theme of sort of granting yourself permission to make change and to take a risk and to try something. So this permission granted, I kept coming back to that. I, after a while, my editor would be like, okay, next chapter is going to be you failed, then you succeeded. Like, I was like, yeah, is it that boring? And he goes, no, it's not boring. It's just, that's the formula. And I said, yeah, you know, it's almost like fail forward. Aha, that, how's that for a title? And he's like, nah, not very positive. But we had a lot of themes around those kind of things. But the idea of imagination was really what I had the most passion for.
And of course, it brings to mind the imagination campaigns we've all seen in 15, 16. I remember those full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, well, I think when I was at GE and I was named chief marketing officer, the first in two decades. And so GE had great advertising. I was on a mission to show that marketing's more than advertising, but I started with what I knew, which was advertising. And the challenge was, how do we unlock our imagination and put it to work, right? Because we were trying to remind people of the inventiveness of this 130-year-old company. And so we needed to get both things right. And your imagination at work was the tagline we introduced, but it replaced an iconic tagline in We Bring Good Things to Life. Still probably, I think, one of the great taglines of advertising. But GE had 100 years of great taglines. I mean, progress is our most important product. I always liked that one. I thought that was really, really good. In the 30s, I think that was something like GE, initials of a friend. I mean, you know, my favorite one was men helping man.
Okay.
And it was right around 69 when we landed on the moon. Okay. I would say it wasn't our most diverse tagline.
Yeah.
But you know, so it was trying to be very relevant. Men helping man, I think, is men helping men, maybe. Anyway, it was so very varied taglines in a 130-year-old company.
Well, an interesting question, if I may. You write in the book that Jack Welch was part of the we're bringing good things to life.
Yeah.
That was part of, so how hard did you have to fight? I know it was when Jeff was already in, but did you have to fight because it was close to Jack?
Yeah, well, I had to fight just the belief that it was almost as if Thomas Edison had etched We Bring Good Things to Life in stone and left it, you know, somewhere in a tomb. And I remember at one point, I mean, Jack had left. Right. This was a couple years into Jeff's tenure, but I pitched the new campaign. I remember one executive, a woman I worked with, she stood up in the back of the room and pounded the table and said, "If you do this, I quit." And it showed you how passionate people are. And what we had to say is We Bring Good Things to Life was amazing, but what it held us back. What we saw is people often thought it was about an appliance and a light bulb company because it was very consumer focused.
Right.
But even more, most people thought it was We Bring Good Things to Light, which isn't it's just associated with a light bulb company, it prevents you from moving forward. And we were trying to speak much more to aviation, healthcare, those kind of things. So in some ways, it held us back. That being said, I think today, this is how many years later, 20 years later, I think today even taglines probably don't serve the same purpose in the world that they used to. They're important, I think, but not in the same way.
So if I may, what is the role of taglines in today's world, 2019?
Yeah, I personally think, one, they have to be very brief.
Okay.
I like the idea of symbols even more because we're in an emoji text kind of world. But I think what taglines are good for, especially is for your employee base and connecting your employees on a company mission. And if it doesn't ring true with your employees, then it's probably not going to ring true for your customers.
You make sure it works internally even before it works externally.
Right. It's a rallying cry. So I feel like that was what we were trying to do. Imagination at Work was, it's about an inventive culture. I don't care where you are. You have to kind of think of a new way of doing it, but you have to get to work. It's about, in R&G's case, it was sweats. We called it Sweat Square. People wanted to really work. So we couldn't lose that. But I think a tagline helps your employees. Why do you work where you work?
Right.
Here's what we do. Here's our mission. Here's what we're trying to do. And there's a story behind it. And it helps everybody communicate that simply. So to me, that's how I'd look at it in today's world. I think it's hard to break through the clutter with a tagline. I mean, look at all the consumer companies. How many of them still use the same tagline? I mean, Nike's just returned to Just Do It,
right,
which I'd argue is one of the best taglines ever. But think about it. It was seeded 30 years ago. Could they seed that today?
Right. Now, it's interesting. The Nike tagline has, of course, the advantage of, I don't know if it's $100 million or whatever the ad budget is put behind it. So, of course, if I may play devil's advocate for a moment, almost anything you would put out with that type of media budget would be successful.
Yeah. Well, there is that. I mean, I think, though, in today's media world, as you know, things are so diffuse.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Nike does a great job, obviously, but they are telling their story in very different ways. I thought it was interesting the way they returned to Just Do It. Recently, you know, they had the amazing campaign. It got a lot of attention with Colin Kaepernick, but also part of that was Serena Williams and others trying to really remind people of that passion of the athlete. So again, it's good for employees.
Right.
It's good for customers. And so that's how I think about taglines today.
Is it true that, I remember hearing this, that when Michael Jordan signed that contract, I believe with Nike, years ago, that was like a turning point in celebrity endorsements?
It must have been. I mean, you look at Jordan, what an amazing brand it is.
Right.
Its own brand within the Nike portfolio. One of the most successful licensed.
If not the most successful.
Right. And what I think I learned about just my association with Nike is just that Michael Jordan's very hands-on. He cares about his brand. He didn't just delegate it. And so I think it also speaks to sincerity of his intention that he's wanted to make sure the quality, and he teamed with Nike, so they're going to do that. But you can't just give your brand to somebody and assume they're going to.
It's a great lesson.
Yeah.
Great lesson.
So I think he's in many of those discussions.
If your name is associated with something, you have to be on top of it in order to make sure that the execution will meet your standard.
Right. You still have to delegate to good people.
Right,
obviously, he didn't do it himself.
Right.
But I think that's a good partnership to look at of somebody who stayed connected but also delegated.
Folks, my guest this evening is none other than Beth Comstock. She just came out with her. Is this your first book, by the way?
It's my first book, yeah.
Wow. Imagine It Forward. But it's like it's many books in one. What I love about the book is, and I'm sharing it the first time here, it merges IQ and EQ. But that's really from going through it. And that's what and the folks here know, I'm very personable and I love the EQ part of it. In fact, I know you talk about soft skills in here. One of my guests was Captain Sully Sullenberger. Mm. And he recounted the whole flight. This is before the movie came out. And I'll never forget, he said on the air, he said, "I bristle when I hear people pushing away the value of soft skills." He said, "When I was there in that cockpit, him and First Officer Jeff Skiles," he said, if I remember correctly, he said, "we didn't even have to talk. We just looked at each other. We knew what we had to do." He said,
"There's this chills hearing you say that."
And I will find it and send the clip. He said it here, and it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was here, I guess.
And why do we call them soft skills, right? It's just sort of, maybe it's like software. I'd in the best case, I'm hopeful that's what people mean, but I don't think so yet. I hope we're returning to a time when people recognize those are essential skills.
Right. That's a great point. It's not just, you know, soft skills almost like, how valuable are they anyway? But meanwhile, they're critical. And certainly, you know, someone who has their, you know, ear to the ground and understands the value, you know, someone that has the soft skills, their value is so great, although many times on the balance sheet, it doesn't necessarily show.
Yeah. And I love that example you said with Sully, because it is often those unspoken communications, that that you've gotten to know one another right. so well. And that's what leadership and business yeah. and it's you form good teams, you form it's because you've taken time to get to know each other as people, not just as manager X, person who sits in that desk who you know, your right. job title.
Right. So Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change by Beth Comstock. What an amazing release. Of course, it's at bookstores nationwide, Barnes & Noble. Go anywhere. It's in the airports. You'll see it. Imagine It Forward. We're going to continue. Stay tuned.
So recently, a healthy couple in their mid-50s came into Alitra Health for their longevity exam. They were not expecting particularly to find anything wrong on the assessment, but the exam showed otherwise.
Dr. Avi Nemitz is medical director at Alitra Health's Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity.
So they go through a very complete evaluation, blood work, scanning of the coronary arteries, stress tests, evaluation by nutritionists and exercise physiologists. We sit down at the end of the day, and his whole world changed in that moment.
Alitra Health provides a full, in-depth, comprehensive longevity exam to detect problems before they occur.
Without an intervention, he was going to have an active cardiac problem. So I told him, look, you're going to be fine. He left with a lot of confidence, knowing exactly what he was supposed to do. We understood what he had, and now he's going to be able to deal with it.
Why spend time worrying when Alitra Health in Manhattan can provide you with a complete snapshot of your health today? Visit AlitraHealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A Health.com. Alitra Center for Life and Longevity. Because nothing matters if you don't have your health.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC. My guest is none other than Beth Comstock. I'm going to say the Beth Comstock. Yes, you deserve that accolade. And thank you so much for joining me here live in studio.
Thanks for having me.
This book is something else. As I've mentioned before the break, it's really the it's an essential business book. Really, I'm not going to knock any college. But if college were smart, they would incorporate this book into their curriculum. Why? It wires in EQ, IQ, and the real story of business and the human side of it. She doesn't just shy away from talking about the human side of things. She was a vice chair of GE, so you could imagine already the responsibility that she carried. But with that, she's raising two children, married. There's a life, travel, it's all in here. Imagine It Forward. So really, thank you for sharing such a work.
Thank
with
you.
The public.
Thanks for reading it.
Well, and not just reading it, I'm studying it. It's such a work. You talk in there about management is dead. Now, that's a strong way of putting it, but you wrote it, so perhaps you could explain.
Yeah, what I mean by that, and it's a great segue to what you just said. I didn't go to business school. I studied biology. I didn't get my graduate degree, but I this is what I learned from the School of Hard Knocks. We think in business that we can manage people. Right. We don't manage anyone. I mean, anyone who has a spouse knows, you want your partner to change.
Right, right.
They're going to be who they are.
Right.
And so I think in business, we somehow get in this idea that I'm a team leader. You're going to do everything I tell you to do. And I think if that was ever true, it's certainly not true now. It's a more distributed world. We have more feedback loops of data. We have employees everywhere.
Mindset.
And so what's your job as a, quote, manager? It's certainly not to manage the people. It's to manage the resources, the time, the opportunity. I think it's really more of a coach. I feel like I learned that lesson later in my career, where you're hopefully giving your team feedback so they can do their best work. And you're fighting for resources and you're fighting for time.
Right.
You're guiding and giving them and asking for feedback. But I think too often, I see this, it's not an age thing. I've seen new team managers, maybe they're 25, maybe they're 35, who think, okay, I'm the boss now. I have to tell everybody what to do. As opposed to, here's the vision, here are the guidelines, here's the problem we're trying to solve. Now, I need you to go figure it out. You need to tell me when you need help. You need to tell me when you're stuck, when it doesn't work. We'll figure those things out together. But I don't think we're teaching that. Certainly, I didn't see that. I think it's changing, but I didn't experience that as much in business.
So if I may, when you talk about different personalities, you know, there are different personality assessment tools out there. There's Colby, DISC, StrengthsFinder, MBTI. Are you a fan of them? What's your take on
that? Yeah, I am a huge personal development person. I always have been. I always think I can be a better version of me somehow if I just work at it.
Okay.
So I've actually been thinking about that as well. But I'd say the two that I've gravitated toward, Myers-Briggs I find interesting.
Okay.
As an introvert, I think it was helpful in the teams I worked with to be able, when we'd go through those exercises where everybody would sort of identify who they were, you'd understand where people's headset was.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about it because I think it can also pigeonhole people. I'm an introvert, so okay, forevermore, I'm INTJ. So I think I'm seen in only a certain way by some people, if that becomes the definition.
Right.
StrengthsFinder I like a lot because it accentuates your strong points.
Mm-hmm.
In many companies, we give you your feedback. Here's the positive and here's your development needs.
Right.
And people tend to obsess on, these are the things I have to do better,
right,
as opposed to leading with your strength. And I don't know, I'm sure you advise your clients. To me, really good business strategy, you start with your strengths. This is what we're good at. Okay, we've got to fill this gap, but let's lead with our strengths. And so I like that as a framework.
Let's talk about the book itself. I mean, even though I'm enjoying it, but I'm in business 30 years. Did you write this book for managers, bosses, if we could say workers, you know, employees? Who's it for?
Yeah, it's primarily for people mid to early career and people who are struggling to make change happen. They feel often stuck. They have bosses who are gatekeepers who won't let them through the gate or they're just not able to sell their idea. It's largely for that. I tried to take myself back to being in my 30s and 40s and how I navigated that.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt. Like you wrote in the book, said, I wish this book was there when I was starting.
Right, exactly. And I think secondarily, it's for their bosses. It's for the people, the C-suite. To remind them that there are models that are changing and that they need to grant permission. As much as I'm saying to people, you have more permission than you think, like just grab agency.
Mm-hmm.
Bosses need to create the environment where people feel safe to do that. So it's not enough just for the individual.
How do you recommend people make time to discover what's next in such a zooming, fast-paced world?
Yeah, well, one of the things I write in the book is the world will never be slower than it is right now.
And I would want you to explain that also.
It's just, you think about it, like, it's like, right now we're celebrating this, it's not ever going to be slower, I mean, unless there's some catastrophe or something, because the pace of technological and global change is just zooming.
Right.
And so what happens is we think, well, just let me get through this and then I'll catch up on that. Well, you never really can catch up. And so I think it's incumbent on all of us to just a little bit of everyone to get good at what's next. And so I have this mantra, make room for discovery. And I think it's incumbent on everyone to get out and see what's happening in the world. And I know when I say this, people go, you don't know my job. I have no time. I have a family. I have no time.
Right.
And most of us feel that way. I guarantee you have 10% of your time spent doing things that you already know the answer to, that you don't really need to do. Do you really need to get back on all those emails? Do you need to continue to go to those meetings that you really aren't interested in or whatever? I guarantee you have 10% of time that you're doing things, maybe you're looking at your sports scores that you already know the answer to, whatever. Take that time, start reading new things. Depending on your industry, if you can you go to an industry conference or something where you can start to understand some trends of what's happening new, go talk to customers. Find out what's keeping them up at night. Walk down the hall. If you're in the marketing department, go talk to the engineering department. Find out what they're doing. What problems are they thinking about? Go see a new pop-up retail concept in your neighborhood, a new restaurant that opened down the corner. Why? Like, what's going on here? Going through the airport, if you pick up a magazine, always you read the same magazine. If you even read magazines, this time pick up something totally different. Recently, a woman told me she took the advice and picked up a wrestling magazine. And, you know, she said she actually discovered this whole passionate community base she didn't know about. Now, she's not going to become a wrestling expert. That's a bit extreme. But I love that you're challenging yourself to say, can I just have a different perspective? And so I'm a big believer in kind of trying to keep pace a bit with the pace of change by trying to understand things that are different and maybe not on your radar screen.
Is there a formula in corporate America that you would say for people that should get out of their cubicle, out of the corner office, just to go out and explore in order to expand the mind?
Well, I think it is this, just make it a priority. I schedule time basically on my calendar to make sure I'm either reading, I'm walking down the block. So I think you control a certain amount of your time, take a different route to work or something. Then I think when you're out there, another kind of formula would be what I call pattern recognition, and I call it going on threes. Pattern recognition, what I call going on threes, really simple. First time you see something, you go, huh, that's interesting. I actually keep a notebook, an interesting list notebook, and I have a note.
Is that the Dragon Slayer challenge?
That's one of them. What I try to do is on my phone even take notes. Like I'll see something, I don't know, let's say I'm going through Penn Station later and I notice everybody's wearing purple shoes. Well, okay why? Second time I see it, I ask, is that a coincidence? Third time I just say, okay, there's a trend building here. It's a pattern. I have to understand it. And then I have to ask, why is it relevant to my company? It could just be an interesting trend, but it has nothing to do with the company where I work. So I think that's part of what you have to do to keep pace with change. You shouldn't necessarily be surprised in business.
Right. You're right about that. Right. Just that where it just catches people off guard. But if they had studied the trends, then they would have seen this. Like you had a great line, and now I don't remember exactly which page it is, but that why should a company get caught broadside when if they took a time out and studied the signs, they're like, hey, I should have seen that coming.
Right, and there should be enough people in a team that can each have a bit of area of interest. This is a great way to add parts to your job that you like to do. I mean, perhaps you become somebody in your job who wants to start a trend little newsletter every Friday where you'd say, hey, three things I saw this week that I think are relevant, or once a month. I mean, it's a way to add some interest to your job without necessarily being invited. I think customers are great sounding boards to understand trends and often then feed it back to them. Like, you're seeing that. Now we're seeing that with three other customers. Right. We see this as a trend. Let's help you figure it out.
My guest this evening, Beth Comstock. She just came out her new release. It's fairly new. Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change. Before we go to a commercial break, I want to talk about communication. Now, the word communication really is gushing forth really throughout the book. But in section one, I want to go through a few examples. One is the example when you had gotten a great offer at GE and your daughter was in sleepaway camp. Tell us the story and the lesson.
Yeah, so I had been working at NBC. I grew up in media, and GE owned NBC was how that connection. And I had gotten an offer to go to GE to work with Jack Welch. And I have two daughters at the time. The oldest daughter was away at sleepover camp. We lived in New Jersey. We were required to move to Connecticut. And I am very efficient. I'm very organized. And my husband and I said, okay, we're going to go for it. I called the realtor. Within 24 hours, she had the sign. And it was a very distinct, it was in Montclair, New Jersey, a very distinctive sign. It had like a fluffy sheep on it. Okay. I don't know why it did. But my daughter comes home from sleepaway camp and drives up, and there's a for sale sign in her house. And at the time, I couldn't have texted her. We didn't have that technology then. But I never quite thought, you know, I should find a way to call her, think ahead five steps, imagine forward the unintended consequences of my speedy, hasty action, and the need to communicate to her directly the story so she heard it from me as opposed to having to interpret it for herself.
Right.
And I still feel incredibly, you know, sad, and I was incredibly guilty about it. But when change happens, it happens to all of us. Right. Most of us, I don't like change that I don't choose. And that's true for most of us. And especially if it's thrust on you and no one explains why. So I use that as an example, one, just to say, you know, I have to figure these things out. I was not a perfect mother. But you have to remind yourself that people need clear communication. They need time to let it sink in. They need to kind of find their way there. And that was just one painful example of that not happening.
I mean, one word I use in the office all the time is over-communicate. Mm-hmm. You can never communicate enough. I mean, of course, you don't want to, you know, make people crazy, but at the same time, you know, that's just...
Do people take your advice? I mean, how do they react to that?
So, yes, I've noticed that the team is really, right, they hung up these signs about over-communicate or something like that. Mm. It seems they're taking to it. And of course, as you discuss in the book, learning from an example is always so effective. And anytime something happens because of a breakdown in communication, so of course I don't say, "Hi, I told you so." I don't do that. But I'm like, okay, this is a good time for us to take a step back and understand the importance of communication.
Yeah, I think that's such a good lesson. I learned that just when you're getting sick of saying it is when people are starting to appreciate what you're saying. And for me, I learned a certain kind of resilience, I think, just even in trying to sell an idea. Especially if I'm the person that's trying to discover what's new and next and bring in these new crazy ideas, the first time you talk about something, people don't know what you're talking about, and you don't often know what you're talking about.
Was that the case with the NBC store?
Yeah,
maybe you could share
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so I was working at NBC, and I worked for Bob Wright, who was the head of NBC, and we had this brilliant idea for the NBC Experience
Store. You had the great
store,
idea, yes.
And a team was put this team, because we wanted, it was a great way, we thought, to accompany the window on the World Studio, and pitched it to Bob the first time. He said no. And by the third time, he said yes. And we did our homework. We worked so hard. And what I realized is that the first time just wasn't as good. And it stuck with me because he looked at me and he said, "I wanted to say no, but you made it so darn hard. You and the team did your homework. You made the idea better." And we started just bringing the idea to life more. I remember once we built like a little diorama showing what it would look like. And frankly, it got better. And he could see it. So that first time, it was like, "What are you talking about?" So in some ways, the more you tell the story, the better it becomes, the more resources you can sort of bring to tell that story, like why, what, as opposed to just the numbers. The return was okay. The finance guy never liked the return. You know, from a business, it wasn't, it was like his threshold. I don't remember what the numbers were, but yet you had
branding
to bring it to life.
And also the branding
and there were other intangibles to it. So that needed time to sink in, and it wasn't an easy sell.
Folks, we're not getting to a commercial break, but we're on a roll here. That brings up No Is Not Yet. Oh, is that great? Perhaps you can, and of course the NBC story is really the example, but maybe you can elaborate any other examples from your decades in business.
Well, I think it is this idea that the first time you pitch something and you get a no, it's a test. How much do you want to do that? So Bob says no NBC Experience Store. The CFO is like, "No, the ROI is not, the return on investment's not good enough." Well, we could have all gone, "Oh, they hated our idea, we're done." But we're like, "No, we see this store. We live for this. We believe in it. So we're going to come back again." And again, and so I think what I saw over the course of a career, being someone who was about innovation and trying to help find money and seed new ideas, is I can't tell you how many times I saw people, whether it was C-suite or just starting out, they'd pitch an idea. Mm-hmm. And it could be as simple as, "Let's change this meeting agenda to here's a new business." They got told no, and you never heard from them again. And it was always like they didn't, you know, like Bob gave me good feedback at that point. So it's incumbent on the person, the decision maker, also to give you feedback. "Here's why I'm not buying that idea yet. I didn't understand it." Or that's, so it's a test of your passion. Do I like that idea? yeah, okay, I got to go back again. I got to find a different way. I got to find other people to join with me because maybe it's better if we go in together. I'll be able to prove to Bob it wasn't just my idea. See Bob, John likes it too.
Right.
So partly you're building up a resilience and you're testing yourself. If you don't have the passion to go back in,
then forget it.
Maybe it's not a good idea. Or maybe it's just not a good idea for you to pursue right now.
One more on communication. Let's go here, page 51. The better we get at doing one thing, the less we want to work on something else. Okay. What's more, we tend to surround ourselves with people who think like we do and reinforce our biases. Okay, I'm getting to something. It takes a lot to work to change your mindset and to continue to keep learning. Business people love to talk about disrupting markets and industries, but we rarely put forth the effort to disrupt ourselves. It's just too hard. This is an interesting point. I mean, I know I'm tying in with communication here, but even communication with yourself, you in the book you talk a lot about. And I know you know, we're not getting spiritual here, but you talk a lot about communicating with yourself. If you have a mindset, you want to start, you're imagining that you could see things differently and you want to see it through. You have a vision for it. Any tips on that? How to like ingrain it into yourself to kind of empower yourself that, you know what, I could see this vision through.
Yeah, that's such a good question. I like the way you asked that. I mean, I think it's a... One, you are testing your passion for it. But I think in part of that, a vision is what you want to accomplish, but there may be various ways to get there. And I think what often happens is we lose our confidence. Oh, no one else likes this idea. But can you find other people? That's the art of communication. Can you sell your idea? Can they share that vision? Does it become their vision? So I think what I felt like I learned painfully was to ask for help and to realize that the idea was only as good as I was and I needed other people to make it better. And that's kind of contradictory because you're trying to say like, I believe in this idea, but I believe in it so much, I'm going to almost give it away. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to ask for other people. I remember I talked about it in the book. At one point, I was up for a really big job and did this big 360 review. And I got some good news, but I got some tough news. And my colleagues were like, you don't ever ask for help. You come in with everything perfect, and we wonder why we're here. And I had to really, oh my gosh, this was holding me back. But what they were saying is, you expect an idea to be fully baked, and then you just come in and say, "Do it." Back to that, you know, I'm the manager, I'm the boss.
Right.
We want to be part of that. We want to join that journey. We are excited by that vision, but we don't feel included. Wow, that was such a lesson to me. And if I hadn't stopped and listened to that advice and go, oh, okay, there's some truth here.
Right.
I'm getting this. It's holding me back. I have to open myself up. So that's the kind of communication you have to have with yourself. And you have to say, I can't give up on that vision, but there's an easier and a better way to get there.
That's similar to the Jack Welch story where even though you knew you were trying to involve people, but that story when he hung up the phone on you and like wanted to make that lesson, people think that, you know, even though in your mind you knew you were doing your best to involve people, but someone else saw it differently and you were willing to accept, which is also a great, you could probably speak volumes about this, how important it is not just to dig in. If you feel strongly about the way your actions are, but there are signs other people are saying something different, keep your ears open. Don't just dig in like they're all wrong.
Yeah, it's such a good important because I think it's a balancing act because you do have this courage. What we're also saying is you have to have some courage of your convictions and passion, yet you have to have those feedback loops. Right. And I think feedback doesn't mean you have to do what everybody gives you feedback on, but I think you do have to listen to it. And you have to say, is this holding me back? Does this take me off the core strategy? Do I still believe, can I get there better, faster? I think those are some of the questions you have to interrogate. No, this isn't feedback I can use now. Okay, I heard you. That was the thing when I got that feedback. I had a great coach. It worked in GE as a HR person. And he said, you have to go into the team. I remember my heart sort of skipping thinking about it. Now I had to go into the team and go, thank you. Feedback received. I need your help. That feeling. But I also know there are times when I've had to say, what do you think? And then I have to go back and say, I heard you, but we're going to go this way because this is what I think is important. And, you know, I'm the decision maker here, but people want to be heard. So I think there's also that communication challenge when you're not accepting the feedback where you say, I heard you, but it's not right for what we need to do. And here's why.
Folks, my guest this evening is Beth Comstock, one of the, according to Forbes and Fortune, one of the most powerful women in the world. Her new book, Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change. It's over 400 pages when you factor in everything, and every single page is just unreal. It's available at bookstores nationwide. If you're traveling, it's in the airports. Of course, you can get it on Amazon. By the way, does it have an audiobook yet?
Yeah, audiobook. I actually read it, so that was quite a fun experience.
Nice. We're going to take a short commercial break, but I wanted to just tease you a little bit. When we come back, we're going to talk about the power of storytelling. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Okay, so you're considering a comprehensive medical exam, but you haven't decided where. At Elytra Health in New York City, we know you have a tight schedule and that you only want the best. We also know you have choices to consider. Well, consider that you could have a world-class executive longevity exam at Elytra's state-of-the-art Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity, right in downtown New York City. Think about the fact that the experts at Elytra Health are a hand-selected staff with more than 30 years of experience in executive exams and concierge medicine, and that top doctors in the area refer their patients to Elytra. Something else to weigh is that cardiac imaging, cancer screening, labs, and all other testing is completed in a single five-hour visit with white-glove service. Plus, you'll receive the results, advice, and follow-up coordination before you leave. Finally, consider how easy it is to get peace of mind from an Elytra exam now by visiting ElytraHealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A Health.com. Elytra Health. Well, above all.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening, Beth Comstock. She just came out with a release, Imagine It Forward. And it's really a synopsis of her life to date. She's a director at Nike. She was a vice chair at General Electric. She was at NBC. She was at CNN. She was at CBS. Yes, you could read all about it. And as I mentioned before, this book is, as I've rarely seen, a merge between EQ and IQ. And that's really the best way, the most personal compliment that I can give to the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And it's really true. We have a lot to cover, but we only have around 10 minutes left. So I hope it's okay. I'm going to ask you on the air. Is it okay if we have you back?
Sure. I'd be great to come back.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to prepare for it. But we still have so much to cover. And as I mentioned to the audience before the commercial break, we have to get to storytelling, one of your great strengths. There's a quote in here, which I just love. Strategy is a story well told. I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, I just believe in the power of story. I think I've always been a storyteller. I think many of us are storytellers. We just may have different job descriptions. But think about story throughout time. I mean, it's the glue that holds generations together. It's about culture. And certainly in sales and marketing arena, we tend to think it's what we do at the end. I think it's where you start, right? I often find people are launching a product. Now we need a story. You know, what's your story? Why do you need a product? Right? We're trying to solve this problem. You're trying to make a connection. So what is a story? A story is your aspiration in the world. Mm-hmm. What are you trying to achieve? It's where you came from, where you're going. It's not all done yet. You're opening yourself up. And when I say it's a strategy is a story well told, I think your strategy is that people have to be able to understand where you're going. They have to see themselves in it. They have to see that I'm going to benefit from your business offering, that there's room for me in that. You're committed to my success. So I often just challenge people, do you know how to tell your business proposition in a story? Tell me a story. If you want to really freak people out when you meet somebody new, just go, hey, it's what's your story? You know, most people, you could tell it, but many of us aren't prepared with that. What do you mean, what's my story? You know, what are you trying to accomplish in the world? Where did you come from? What gets you excited? These are the kinds of things that I think apply to anybody, any business, any product. And we think in business that that's not relevant. It's just about the pure logic, the pure, you know, financial or economic terms. It's about connecting.
So any tips in particular for there are many small business owners in the audience of this show to craft, let's say they're going to rebrand, any tips on creating the narrative of a rebrand?
Well, one, especially if you're a small business, you're just so rich with story. I mean, you brought to life this passion. Let's say you're a florist, let's say you're in Montclair, New Jersey, and you're running a floral shop. You obviously have some passion that took you to open a floral shop. Right. What was that? Did you grow up picking flowers in your grandmother's garden? Do you see yourself as a nature lover?
Right.
Try to bring that to bear. And then what are you trying to do with your customer? You're trying to bring them a color in their life. You're trying to bring them some kind of story to the way they tell their life. I tell a story. I always remember this one. There's a farmer's market I know in a small town in Connecticut. And I would love the way they would say, like, I would go in and there were two sets of strawberries. And I always bought the more expensive one because the proprietor was so good. He'd go, oh, this woman in Pennsylvania, she's this lovely little Amish woman. And she woke up early and she gently wiped the dew off of these strawberries, gently picked them. I don't know if that's true. Hopefully he was telling me the truth. But I love that this woman gingerly picked my strawberries and gave them to me. That was a story that I wanted to invest in for my strawberries. It works. You know, you're a marketer. It works. Story is a connection.
You know what I love about that story? How it brings together someone. Let's hopefully that is true. This farmer, this person in Amish town, Pennsylvania,
right.
And this superstar working out of Boston, right? The vice chair in General Electric. We're all human.
We're all human.
We're all human. Maybe
we're
you could just
human.
Talk about that.
And I think that is a story. It's back to you said the EQ and the IQ. It's your emotional connection. And when in business, if your strategy isn't connecting, if people aren't getting it, it's maybe because you don't have a real strategy. If you can't tell a story, why are you passionate about this business strategy? Why am I passionate of starting this business? Why am I passionate to be offering you these strawberries? If I can't tell you that, then maybe there isn't a good reason you have to offer that. Even if it's lowest prices every day, I have a story of what I'm offering you. And it's not just, 10 cents off. Okay, then why am I getting, is there something bigger than that? I don't know. I'm just a big believer that that's part of what our job is in business.
How important is it when saying a story to try to tap into all the senses wherever possible to get it via video, via print ad, via social media, et cetera?
Yeah, one of the challenges I think we had at GE was what we called making the invisible visible. And for many businesses, we're not selling something you can hold.
Right.
And so we were selling electricity or healthcare. And so we had to find a lot of ways to tell stories of the story behind the story. One of my favorite ones was taking MRI machinists to meet cancer patients, cancer survivors, and to make the connection that the MRIs that you engineer and make with your hands are saving the lives of these people right here. That's the story behind the story. It was an powerful connection for them and for anyone who got to see it. So I think that's part of the value of story. It's a connection.
Or the story of the people working on the engines, you took them to Boeing Field.
Exactly, and there were tears, like grown men were crying because they had not seen their handiwork. They'd seen jet engines flying around, but they had never seen their work take off. So with employees, I think especially to be able to tell the story of your work matters. I remember one of my jobs in college, I worked for a summer in the Rubbermaid factory in Winchester, Virginia.
Wow.
And I remember once we were making trash cans for the Bermuda Princess Hotel or something. And, you know, I like it, at our little line, we'd be going like, what do you think they're doing in the Princess Hotel? And just the idea of being we told ourselves these stories, and everybody needs to know those connections that their work is going on to do something. So sometimes a story can be quite simple. This project is going to happen here. Or here's a story of the person who works in my company and why they're working here. So I think those
Such
are really important stories.
Even for the team itself.
Yeah.
Don't just look at it for the outside in terms of leveraging it to market to the masses. But for the team itself, if they're brand ambassadors, if they're vested, if they really are passionate because they understand the story, so you're sharing that they'll perform better.
I think so. I mean, that's been my experience. When we were at GE, we spent a lot of time focusing on Thomas Edison and the story of Edison as the founder of GE. I think that was important for people to see that innovative spark and to say that iconic innovator archetype was part of their corporate DNA. It sort of made them a little proud. Hey, I come from that, you know, in theory. So people need a story. I'm just convinced.
Let's talk about, I mean, this is a question that I really must ask someone of yourself who has been in the trenches many, many times and so, I mean, every business is faced with this type of a challenge, you know, all the time. And that is, a company embarks on a new ambitious initiative and they've made a headlong dive. They're perhaps months or years into the development and it has not seen success yet. And I hope I'm not asking you a question that's impossible. But okay, is there a formula that you would suggest to know when to still stick it out or when to throw in the towel?
Oh, such a deep question.
Sorry.
And what I tried to share in the book was there were times I probably persevered on when I should have asked myself that question. So I tried to share some of that. Okay. I mean, there was an example of a company we were backing that went bankrupt. And, you know, I tried everything possible to not make that happen. It ultimately went bankrupt, right? So even though you try your hardest, there are things that are not going to work. So I think, one, you have to just stop and ask a lot of questions. That you have to define these moments where you go, have we failed enough? Have the failures given us insight on what's working or not? Is this, am I still getting enough feedback to believe that this is still going to work? Is there, you know, have I gone from one customer to several customers? So am I still just stuck with one customer? Do I have no customers? That's probably a good sign that maybe you're not quite clear of what you're doing. But you have to have little signs of encouragement. And I think also just, are we working too hard for what we're getting back? And that's where sometimes having outside perspective, having other people come in, I'm big on bringing sparks in from the out, I call them sparks, outside people to come in and challenge you. Sometimes it just needs a new perspective to say you're too close to it. Because often you keep persevering and you haven't really changed your perspective. So get yourself feedback loops. Ask yourself, are you failing enough to make sure that the success is there? Are you really battle testing it? And then if you're not getting the feedback that validates you're on the right path, you probably have to say, we have to either at least take a break. Maybe I need to give it to somebody else. Maybe there's a fresh perspective. That's often why founders of companies turn it over to someone else, because they maybe have taken it as far as they can.
And also they're so emotionally vested that it's hard to really see beyond their own vision.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Yeah, I'm big on these ideas of trying to seed things early to kind of test and learn your way before, as part of your process, so that the walkaway cost is less at that point, as opposed to everybody's all in and there's no way we can fail. Hopefully you've battle tested it before you get to that point.
My guest this evening, Beth Comstock, Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change. The book is available nationwide. Just Google Beth Comstock and then you'll know what she's all about and why we fought hard to get her on this program. And she is gracious enough already to commit to come back on the show, because I still have hundreds of questions to ask you. And of course, the audience of the rough number is 38,000 people, and each and every one of them. I get feedback all the time. I get a high from it. I'm always touched. I went to a wedding last week. I don't know if it was a dozen. Many people stopped me. I listen each week. I appreciate the feedback. I got an email from someone who runs a school in Las Vegas, and he said, "I implement a lot of the ideas even in running the school."
That's great that you've made that connection.
Yeah.
People obviously feel your commitment to your curiosity.
Thank you. So just as a final takeaway, because we have only around a minute and a half left, I mean, it's an unfair question because you could probably give 500 answers to this question, but I'll just ask it. Any takeaways that you could share, especially to connect with the mindset of an entrepreneur, a small business owner who comprise the majority of the listenership of this program?
I'd say two things. I mean, just practice like knowing what your story is. If I met you tomorrow, if you met someone tomorrow, right. What's your story? Right. Think about what's your story. What do you want? How do you want to be understood in the world?
Right.
And then this idea of make room for discovery. I mean, change is happening. I don't care how new your business is. There's somebody out there who's going to try to do it better. So are you getting out and exploring where change is happening? And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes curiosity, open mind, and taking 10% of your time to do that.
Beth, thank you so much. And of course, looking forward to meeting again in the near future.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for having me.
That was Beth Comstock. Her new book, Imagine It Forward, it's available nationwide, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, bookstores. If you're traveling in the airports, you'll see it. Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change. It's all wrapped into this amazing book. Well, that wraps up a great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.